When migrating to an SD-WAN, an interesting design question comes along. Do you still need a branch router? Well, let's think about this a second. What does a branch router do? Circuit termination, routing, maybe QoS, tunneling perhaps, filtering, or maybe even firewalling. Maybe there's virtual networks, VRFs. Maybe a few other functions like DDI, depending on what you've stacked on the box there at the branch. Well, can an SD-WAN appliance do all of those things? In the early days, the answer was probably not all of those things, and so you'd often keep your branch router in line with the SD-WAN device. But what about today? Do you still need to keep that branch router around, sucking down power and running up your maintenance costs? Or can a modern SD-WAN forwarding device be a full replacement for a branch router? Derek Granath, VP of Product Marketing, and Rolf Moralt, VP of Product Management for SD-WAN at Silver Peak, join us for today's sponsor discussion about branch router architecture. Welcome to the Packet Pushers Network, gentlemen. And let's just jump right in with a question here to level set and start the conversation. When moving to SD-WAN, actually, why would we replace the branch router at all? Can you give us some business drivers that makes sense here?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, Ethan. Why would I even want to consider replacing a branch router that I've been using since the 80s? You know, branch routers from big companies that start with the letter C have been around since the mid-80s, and they've been doing their job quite well. Well, as most of your audience knows, most of our audience today knows, traffic patterns have changed. Applications are moving to the cloud. We've all seen the statistics that, you know, by 2020, 70% of workloads will be in the cloud, blah, blah, blah. But we're still on that journey, and it is a journey. But as applications move to the cloud and as user expectations change, traffic patterns have changed. And another important statistic to remember is that 80% of business transactions, 80% of customer interactions happen from branch sites. And that traditional router model, when you're accessing cloud applications, that traffic gets backhauled back to headquarters where it can be screened by an advanced security service, you know, a next-gen firewall, IDS, IPS, UTM, et cetera. That's simply too expensive to put in every branch. But that backhaul adds latency, it adds delay, and that makes SaaS applications or cloud-based applications like Office 365, Salesforce, Marketo, Workday, You name it, there's hundreds, thousands of them, it slows them down. And that frustrates users and it delivers a bad experience. So it's this change in traffic patterns and the migration to the cloud that's causing people to rethink the wide area networking architecture.
So I think what you're saying there is a thing that I think I heard called internet breakout, whereas the branch itself until now has always sent the traffic back to head office and then pivoted around, tromboned it back through a firewall and a scanning cluster back out to the internet. And so everybody in the company, the branch network is a point to point. It goes back to head office where it goes. But what we're seeing is that as traffic shifts away to the cloud, and the classic example, I think, is Office 365 with email. Why are you sending it all the way down to head office to turn it back around and put it up when in SD-WAN you could be sending it direct to the internet from the branch? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. But there's a whole lot of considerations there, Ethan.
Yeah.
Or Greg, sorry. You know, when you do that, there's security considerations because not all web-bound traffic is created equal. I might have web or users sending Office 365 traffic, and I trust that. But you know, some of my users doing home from work might be sending Facebook traffic or God forbid, even BitTorrent traffic or Nutella or something like that. So you've got to treat each of these with the right set of policies, security policies that are dictated by the branch. So I can't trust all of it, therefore I can't send all of my web-bound traffic directly over the internet to the web.
Right. So we've got this situation now where I've got traffic coming in to, well, normally it would be a router, but now I've got to send it in multiple different directions. So I've got to be able to say, I recognize Office 365, or I recognize social media traffic, or I recognize personal traffic, and I have to make pathing decisions based on the application, not on the IP address.
That's right. That's right. And that's why advanced SD-WAN solutions are being characterized as application-driven and application-aware. And there's a lot of ways that people use or that vendors use to identify and classify applications. But one challenge here is because I'm steering this traffic to different locations, I'm going to steer some of it straight to the internet. I'm going to backhaul some of it back to headquarters, that BitTorrent traffic that I really want to scrub. And there may be that intermediate kind of classic traffic that I want to send to a cloud-based security service like Zscaler or Symantec or Palo Alto or whatever. And so I got to make that steering decision. And not to get too technical here, but because of network address translation, I have to know what the application is. I've got to know where I'm going to send it on the very first packet. And so I need something better than deep packet inspection that's been kind of the traditional way of identifying apps, because DPI takes, you know, 3, 5, sometimes 10 or 12 packets to identify that app.
Yeah. But I think that's a key thing, is we're actually selecting path by application, not by IP address. And there's a key difference between what your router does. Is there anything else the router might do that has value? Because if I'm routing by applications, what's the point of having a router itself? It's just going to say one path, one IP, you know, by subnet this way.
You know, what we like to talk about is that you still need routing. You still need the ability to support traditional routing protocols like BGP and OSPF to connect to the outside world, because not everybody is, you know, connected to the SD-WAN on day one. We have a number of customers that grow through acquisition. And as they bring on a new company, or even a company that's just spinning up new sites, it may take them a few weeks or a few months to get that MPLS circuit, if they need an MPLS circuit, although we'll have another part of this conversation where we talk about how we actively can use broadband securely and safely. It's part of the local internet breakout discussion. But I want to connect those offices into the wide area networking infrastructure right away. And so I still need to have routing capability. But
if I've got a box that can do application routing, I can do IP routing easy. Like, IP routing isn't mystical magic like it used to be. It's table.
Yeah, I mean, one of your comments at the beginning of the session, in the early days, the answer was probably not all of those things would be supported by the SD-WAN solution. But, you know, we've seen tremendous feature velocity over the last 2.5-3 years in the SD-WAN space, and a number of the more advanced solutions out there, including, you know, the one that we have from Silver Peak, include routing. And so you don't really need that router anymore. You need routing, and it's integrated into the SD-WAN solution.
And the other part to keep in mind is the fact that routing protocols are standards, right? They're RFCs. There's actually very, very little benefit to a customer to be doing any innovation on a BGP or an OSPF. So these are technologies that are very, very important because it's what makes you interoperable at the edge. And so we want to speak all of these open protocols. But that's not where you want to innovate, right? The innovation is really on the policy plane, on the layer 7 application recognition. But these are table stakes, absolutely.
No, another issue here. Some people are listening to this going, okay, my WAN edge, these router configurations are complicated. Now, every time I got to make a change, it's a pain in the butt because I got all of this stuff to deal with just in the form of configuration management. And now you're adding all of this functionality, application routing, how you split the traffic, optimizing traffic that's heading to and from public cloud. And people's heads might be exploding thinking, how am I supposed to manage that? And I think the answer there is centralized management. Really, we're in an SD-WAN paradigm. We're doing policy management through some centralized controller.
We sort of call this top-down versus bottom-up, right? So if you think about the traditional box-centric way, that's a bottoms-up way. So if you wanted to have some security policies, have some ACLs configured in a device, you would do that locally, then go do it 10, 100, 1,000 more times. And out of that hodgepodge of ACLs, you'd hope that at the higher level, some meaning would emerge, right? Some actual policy and business goals would get implemented. In our case, we're going top down because we have this centralized orchestration or centralized control plane where you can sort of express what is the end goal of the network for Office 365. What is my security policy? Do I want to break it out directly from the branch? And you do that from a central point. And the machine executes that policy. It actively does some learning, like what Derek was referring to in terms of the machine learning, in terms of the matching of application names to IP addresses. But all of that is top down, right? Which is just a much more efficient way of expressing policy that makes sense at scale.
Yeah, and you define it once and then you push it out to all of those 10, 100, or 1,000 locations. You know, Rolf, you and I, we like to talk about configuration sprawl. If I've got to touch 1,000 branch offices and touch the routers and potentially the firewalls in all of those, even if I'm using scripts, what are the odds that I'm going to get them all the same? What are the odds that I'm going to have a consistent set of policies across all of those sites?
If experience tells me, not much.
No.
Because, you know, we've had so many hardware dependencies over the year, you know, like this particular hardware only supports this cost strategy. And really, we need to get away from hardware dependency on that so you can have a consistent configuration. I think, if I remember rightly, most SD-WAN appliances, certainly with Silverpeak, your edge devices are x86 based. And so you don't have that sort of, oh, this chip only does that, or that interface only does these, has these QoS queues and that sort of stuff.
That's yeah, right. And the interesting part about the hardware piece is I'm a huge fan of best of breed when it comes down to being able to apply the right software function, the right next generation firewall capability to certain traffic class. But there's best of breed often in networking is boxed up in this piece of sheet metal, right? Mm-hmm. That is hardware and software. There is no best of breed ability to design a better hardware for a branch location. The data center, when we can get back to that, might be a little bit of a more nuanced conversation. But in the branch, every box that is stacked up in your branch is an x86 with a motherboard that probably came from the same factory in Taiwan. Same memory, exact same architecture, there is no sense to do best of breed hardware. So now the value is really at the software level. And in that case, and maybe that's a little bit of a long discussion we can have around which parts of the software stack does it make sense to integrate into one piece, because it may make it more simple to manage versus where do you really need the best of breed?
Because when I talk to people, a lot of them go, oh, you know, but my router's got super magic powers inside. Right. And I guess what I'm trying to get to the point is that those sophisticated, clever features from previous eras are no longer applicable, because they were based, as you say, in an era when silicon was expensive and hard and underpowered. So the way to maximize the performance of the router was to use this complex hardware capabilities. But we can now do 100 gig of forwarding performance through an x86, and not even a very particularly large one, might I say. And if you put fancy NICs in, you can do 2 by 100 gig. So if you're using a lower cost x86 device at the edge, you can certainly do 10 gig with hierarchical QoS and all the features and the application recognition without any trouble whatsoever. You don't need custom hardware like you did in years gone by. Things have changed.
That's great. Right. And also the encryption is also part of something that you can do at wire speed on an x86. And the other, you know, sort of the acid test for, you know, where is it software innovation or is it hardware innovation? When a lot of these router throughputs are traditionally quoted, right, say in the last 10, 20, or, you know, more recently, those are usually quoted on the basic of what an ASIC can do, but then you want to switch on these extra functions, right? So I'm going to switch on encryption because I'm going over the internet. I'm going to switch on my zone-based firewall capability within the router, and then that number goes down. And so that is something where we felt that it shouldn't be optional to turn on all these things and you're down to this math exercise of what performance you'll actually get. This needs to be baked into the architecture as a pipeline from A to Z.
Well, let me ask you a question then. How do you monitor that performance loss? Like, it is true that an x86 doesn't give you guarantees. Do you have a management capability in your SD-WAN products that do that? Like, does Silverpeak have a monitor how much performance is coming out of those boxes and tell me if it doesn't?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And the beauty with the orchestrator is you can actually assign these performance, and we call them service level objectives. And so within sort of our policy, you would express what is the performance level that I want to achieve for a certain class of applications. And you can have your mission critical applications have hard guarantees, and then your Netflix and your YouTube and your other traffic that you may be perfectly happy to transport is going to get a separate set of guarantees. And the reason it's important is if I'm at a branch where I'm breaking out some traffic, I still have my MPLS, so I have the capability to backhaul, but I'm also breaking out directly to the internet, what happens if that internet goes down, right? Do I have a second internet? And the device needs to automatically be able to adapt to that level of local site customization. And this is where policy is very different from a template. So in a template, I can push out my, I can stamp all of these sites, but I can't allow for any local deviation in terms of the real-time performance changes. And that's really where the orchestration becomes key, and having that closed feedback loop between the appliance, the data path, and the control plane, and being able to respond in real time.
Well, let's ask some practical questions here. I'm curious to know what kind of circuit terminations I can do in an SD-WAN appliance these days. As far as I know, Ethernet and USB, those are pretty straightforward. Ethernet, then some kind of a USB adapter that lets me maybe connect to LTE, something like that. But TDM circuits, if I'm running T1 or fractional T1, which is still a thing in a lot of places, can I terminate all of those kinds of circuits on an SD-WAN appliance, or is there an issue there where I might still need my my old school router?
Yes, I think by and large the issue, and when we launched the product about three years ago or so, we actually expected to see more requirements around T1 connectivity. And we actually had a project to potentially go do that. But it turns out that these requirements really don't exist for 90-95% plus of customers. Where they do exist, and I'll mention E911 as another example, often this is the case where perhaps we don't always replace the router. And often it becomes essentially a media converter. So when we talk router replacement, in some cases you may still have the router box, possibly because your service provider is making you use it as a CE, but you're not doing any actual policy on it. And so that means from a management point of view, it doesn't become this box by box configuration drift nightmare that it generally is today.
Because it ends up being a very, very simple configuration. As you said,
exactly
media converter.
Right.
Yeah. You got
literally a media converter.
T1 or 4-wire, whatever it is, facing the carrier, and then Ethernet facing the SD-WAN appliance, and all the intelligence and magic is in the SD-WAN appliance.
You got it. Yeah.
So I guess the flip side of that is, what about things like 4G and 5G? I want to be able to use the same, my mobile type circuits as an emergency backup or as an out of band network instead of what I used to do with modems. Support for that?
So we've developed a couple of partnerships with vendors that provide LTE modems. Some of them even can support multiple different LTE services. We've elected not to put that functionality directly in our appliance, because that appliance is typically sitting in a closet or in a data center, and that's not the best location to get a really good wireless signal. That's typically near a window, and so these modems have an Ethernet port on the output, and they plug directly into our appliance, just like any other internet or DSL or cable modem or even a piece of CPE that's terminating an MPLS service. So that's our belief is that that's the better way of looking at how to integrate LTE into the solutions.
You get a little box that goes on the end is I think what people have told me, and you just plug it in and away it goes.
Yeah. Yep.
And they can be centrally managed as well, so you don't lose a whole lot of features. When we do the internet breakout, the question that comes to mind is, what happens to security scanning and logging? So for a lot of companies, when users use the internet, you want to have some sort of visibility into what the user is doing, but you also want to know that they're not downloading something unsafe or something, getting malware or spear phishing. Are there solutions for that?
Yeah, so we like to say we have a Goldilocks strategy towards security. You know, I want just enough in the branch, but not too much because it's too expensive. And so, you know, our solution and some of the other advanced SD-WAN solutions include firewall capabilities. We've elected not to do a next generation firewall. They're best of breed industry leading partners that we partner with and can really simply with a drag and drop interface service chain to those services. Mm. So it really comes back to that application is how well do you trust that application and what kind of screening do you need? If there is the opportunity to leak intellectual property, you would want to send that off. You'd want to service chain it to a more advanced security screening device or service to be able to take care of that. But we don't want to necessarily specialize in all of that. There are companies that do that for a living.
Well, do I have to service chain off to one of your partners, or could I service chain maybe for certain kinds of traffic? I want to service chain back to my big old firewall cluster I got back at headquarters and do the inspection there.
Yeah, so we can certainly do that, and we can do that with Fortinet Checkpoint and Palo Alto. And the integration that we've done is, you know, on our orchestration screen, it actually says Palo Alto and Checkpoint and Fortinet, and you just drag it over and you say that's, you know, the primary policy, and a secondary policy if that one fails is something else. So it's really simple drag and drop. Mm. Ralph, maybe you could comment on service chaining to any other types of devices.
Right. So there is, as Derek said, these predefined policies that are drag and drop, but you can define your own. So if you have your home built firewall that you want to drop at a series of hubs, you can create a resource pool around that and then drag and drop that into the service chain. So what happens there basically is the branch traffic that is identified in terms of the application match that it needs to go through that chain of security will get backhauled to the closest hub, so you can have multiple hubs. It's then forced to go through that inspection device, gets back into the virtual network overlay, essentially, and then onto its destination. So it's very extensible. We do have some built-in firewall capabilities for what I would say are direct-to-net SaaS needs. So for example, Office 365 trusted applications, where generally the enterprise is looking to offer really high quality of experience to the user in the branch, you can drop those straight via the SD-WAN appliance into the internet, and we will apply the stateless firewall capabilities to make that secure in the open and connected internet environment.
Now, on this SD-WAN appliance, it is sitting at the internet edge typically. It's a lot of the context of what we're talking about here. So folks that are thinking about that using internet edge, maybe they're used to taking in full BGP tables. You can do that with actually a fairly small router now, as long as you throw enough RAM in it. Maybe they're worried about NAT because that's going to be their transport out. Do you have to worry about sizing of the SD-WAN appliance or anything like that to do some of these memory intensive tasks?
Yes. So the answer is yes. And the other part too, if you're connecting to LT, if you don't want your customer to need to get a public IP address for them from the service provider, you're also going through carrier grade NAT. And in carrier and CG NAT, different flows may get different address translations. And so that's certainly a capability that from an advanced SD-WAN solution, you'd want to make sure that you're able to deploy in that environment. Now, on the size of the BGP table, so generally what we maintain from a routing point of view is obviously all of the private IP addresses that are within the enterprise. And so for a very large customer, right, that could be typically we see between 4,000 and maybe 16,000.
Right, very small number of routes compared to, not going to take much RAM at all. Yeah.
And then for the internet, for SaaS traffic, really, we're not trying to be a route reflector, right? So where you see a lot of these huge million table size requirements is where you need to absorb the whole internet routing table. And it's generally more of a route reflector application. In the branch, that is not the case, right? You have your private IP addresses. Then we can make a decision. Well, this is Office 365. It's going out to the internet, but I don't need to suck in the whole internet table to do that part.
Well, and I think that some people are going, well, I do in my application because just the way they're doing it, they're actually trying to load balance across multiple egress points, and they're using BGP and carrying full tables because they can. But in our case here, we're actually talking about application routing, where the way you're making decisions about what application is going to get forwarded across which link is through live checks of the performance of that link against an SLA and making sure that it can be delivered. So you end up with kind of a different way to think about how a circuit is chosen to forward traffic.
Exactly. Yes, it's more about the loss, right? So we have, and and, you know, other advanced solutions will have a way to determine, is this link in a blackout condition, which the routing protocol that you're referring to can do. But the more interesting case of the internet is a more of a brownout situation, right? So it's something where at a certain time of day, maybe routers are getting more congested. And so it's not binary, and the routing protocols weren't designed to deal with that, whereas the SD-WAN routing, the way we
see it. It wasn't just routing protocols, it's QoS. QoS wasn't designed to do that.
Yeah. Well, exactly right. And that is really the key part of what the SD-WAN routing does that a traditional layer 3 router does not do.
Yeah, I think that was important to bring up just in the sense that if you're trying to replicate exactly what your edge router does today and make the SD-WAN appliance do the same thing, you got to adjust your thinking. You know, the design and the architecture of this, problems that you have are being solved in different ways, and the requirements you maybe once had are maybe subsumed. It may be a different thing now. But still, we got some corner case and some oddball things that I wanted to bring up in addition to what we've already talked about. For example, where are we at with multicast? We still got some networks that if they need multicast, they tend to really need multicast. What's the support look like for that with SD-WAN these days?
So our position is that customers should not have to make a decision of trading off something they already have, right? So that's certainly something that that we are looking to provide. The use cases are fairly narrow nowadays. I would say there's still the use case of the CEO broadcast, if you will. But more and more in enterprises, this is now done on demand. And so not everybody is watching at the same time, right? So there's actually better ways that we do that in connection with our packet deduplication capability to be able to reduce the traffic on the WAN linked for these video broadcasts. But to your point, there's some paging applications, there's music on hold, et cetera, right? There's a few very low bandwidth applications that still require it. I think over time, I would expect that traditional multicast will be less and less of a factor because it was really, quote unquote, invented in a WAN in an era where WAN bandwidth was very limited, right? So if you have your T1 and your MPLS and you get a megabit per second to a branch office with 20 people, and these people are going to watch a video, it better be that you have multicast.
Yeah, I always thought multicast was
kind of gone away.
I always thought multicast was a technology looking for a solution. Like the theory behind it is perfectly sound. We want to use less bandwidth. But the reality is that managing, even creating multicast clients was inordinately difficult. Getting them to receive and then signal back when they didn't want it and all that sort of stuff, it just never worked out very well in the long run. And I do think there were certain vendors who felt that there was value to be had by convincing customers that multicast was a thing. So.
Yep. you said it.
If you've got a really good multicast thing, then maybe selling multicast was a really good thing to make your thing.
And you had a phone that you're also selling that had this little music on hold feature that would be the single and only thing that to really benefit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if you were selling that as well on top of the thing that had me, that's a good thing. What about IPv6?
Must. Absolute must in an SD-WAN solution, in my opinion. Generally, what happens is within the enterprise, on the what we call the LAN side, right? So within the branch, within the data center, for a lot of enterprises today, they're still on IPv4. But if you're going to go over an internet link, you may have to go V6 in certain geographies. But the other piece that we found, which is really interesting, is if you provision let's say a Comcast, let's give an example, right? Service, you will get a V4 address and a V6 address. Now you're paying once for this link, but on the SD-WAN appliance, we can actually tunnel via V6 and via V4. So with one purchase, you've actually now already gotten the hybrid, a two-link internet connection, because the backbone side of these two networks is actually quite different, right? So you actually have gained some of the multipathing aspects by purchasing not two internets, but just one internet, and you happen to get both V4 and V6 addresses. So very, in my opinion, V6 absolutely required. WAN side, might as well do it LAN side as well. It will come someday.
In other words, the last mile is the same. It's just a circuit, whatever it is that happens to share two addresses. V4 and V6. But once that packet, you know, V6 hits the provider backbone, the V6 engineered path could be completely different from V4. And so you're getting that multipath diversity. That's what you're getting at?
That is exactly right. And we never, that wasn't even something we really had as a design point in the product. But once we had it deployed a few times and people started doing that, it actually works surprisingly well, because the blackout on the last mile, right, you need to have some other form of hybrid to deal with that. And maybe it's 4G LTE, which is really becoming a true form of WAN connectivity. But the congestion of the internet piece is actually gain for free some surprising extra element of resiliency by doing this. And it's costing you nothing, right? That's the beauty of it.
Now, Rolf, you mentioned WAN optimization before. What is the adoption rate of that, of those folks that are taking on SD-WAN? Because you can make the argument that with other protocol optimizations, we kind of don't need it anymore. Is that maybe a corner case thing?
I think the part to think about with WAN optimization is certain applications still benefit very heavily from WAN optimization. The other piece is, if you're a branch that is connected to the internet and to an MPLS network, on the good day where the internet is available to take out all your SaaS traffic and send it that way, you probably are not overutilizing your MPLS network. But what if you lose that, right? So so you need to kind of have the plan B aspect of, now I have a lot more traffic that I need to go fit on this much smaller MPLS case. But to your point, absolutely, it is not like the old days of WANOP, where the WANOP box had bandwidth X because an X had to match the bandwidth of your MPLS pipe, right? Today, the WANOP capacity can be less than, and should be less than, your actual transport capacity. And so from a SolarPeak point of view, the way we decided to change our model was to allow you to consume WANOP on demand as a centralized resource pool. So no longer associated with a specific site, you're just using it on demand as a resource that you purchase centrally and that you can reallocate by applications, because not all of the apps need it, or by branches.
Right? I think, well, to give you an example there, we recorded a podcast with one of SilverPeak's customers called Blue Cross Healthcare in California. And he was indicating that they are using the WAN acceleration because file transfers, they do a lot of file transfers between sites, and they're getting 80 to 90% compression on that file transfer. And so that's just a lot of money to be saved when, you know, they're an office basically handing around documents, and those file transfers take up a lot of their bandwidth. So there are, while, you know, we talked earlier about how, you know, you can get more bandwidth and more things, but for this use case, there's still times when WAN optimization is absolutely the thing. And he was particularly keen to say that the WAN optimization feature was really easy to use in SilverPeak's case. So it's literally just like at the console, turn it on, and then the licensing kicks in, and that's it.
So we have another customer that's a radiology, a set of radiology clinics in New York, and they're passing huge, you know, MRI files and CTs, and they've got a limited amount of time to transfer those files because there may be a hospital where an operation is happening and they need that information over there. And so that's where data deduplication comes in. But what we are seeing is that data deduplication and compression is a little less important than it used to be, but protocol acceleration, that file transfer example that you just talked about, you know, I don't care if I have a megabit or 10 gigabits or 100 gigabits between San Francisco and Tokyo. The round trip latency is still about 80 milliseconds, and I can't get around that. Nobody knows how to beat the speed of light, but we've learned how to fool it. And so,
WAN optimization still has a use case. But I think the thing that I think we all know that, or hopefully everybody in the audience knows that. But the thing I think I took away from it was, it's just in there. I don't have to go out and make a purchase of these expensively unique special boxes and put them on the edge in front of my routers and send somebody out to deploy them with Mystic, you know, command line interfaces. It's, oh, I want that. Let me just check my capacity in my box. Yes, turn it on, click, I've got WAN optimization, boom. But it's a license, but it's a feature that you have to license, but it's there if you want it.
That's right.
Another odd integration question then. We mentioned multicast and IPv6 and WAN optimization. What about EAGRP? A lot of Cisco shops out there, and that's their core routing protocol. But most non-Cisco boxes don't speak that. How do you deal with that?
We have a number of customers that are deployed with EIGRP. In those cases, we don't replace the router, right? So this is one of the cases where we either sit in line or out of band. So there is about three other models that we support and have supported for a long time, because that was the way that business used to get done in a WAN optimization versus a Nest WAN router environment. And so yes, we can support these environments. No, we do not run the stack natively. I don't believe SD-WAN vendors generally do.
Got it. Okay. Another design question then. High availability. Maybe they run two physical WAN routers because they just need that much uptime. And so they'll do that. They'll have circuit diversity. What should I be looking for in an SD-WAN appliance? Like the ability to, cluster or distribute circuits across multiple SD-WAN appliances at the edge? What does that look like?
I love the fact that you use the word clustering. And so in a traditional router HA environment, you are not clustering, right?
No,
you're just dropping them into the same place. But there are two devices to manage. So if you have a 1,000 site enterprise, now you're a 2,000 router environment, right? So you just double the complexity. We support a couple of different ways of doing HA, but one of the very interesting ways that we introduced about a year ago is what we call edge HA. So this is designed for a branch environment where two SD-WAN appliances cluster together, right? So they've got kind of the inner would be called the inner switch link if it was a switch, but it's not. So what we call the HA link. And they become at that point one, what some people call a virtual chassis, right? So that is now one single system. It is managed from the orchestration layer as one single system. I can choose to plug in the single cable or single port I'm going to get off my Comcast modem. I can plug it into any one of these two physical devices, and it's part of the single system. And so that makes HA more simple. It also makes it a lot more flexible in terms of being able to accommodate splitting ports and not requiring this extra layer of northbound switches, if you will, between the router and the actual physical modem. And so that makes HA something that we think should be in every single location, right? The application cloud has become so important to enterprises. In my opinion, there should be no question that you'd want to have HA in every place.
Now, just curious, on the front end of that, as traffic is coming from the LAN into that edge cluster, as we've described it, is there load balancing going on in some way where there's some magical, today I'm going to respond to the ARP request, and now I'm going to respond to the ARP request, and so you get some load balancing, or is really everything just kind of hammer its way into one of the members of the cluster, and then it kind of gets forwarded around from there?
Great question. So WAN side, for sure, right? We always want everything to be active, because the WAN side of the resource is the expensive part, right? In most branches, LAN side bandwidth is cheap. It's literally over-provisioned and free, right? You're going from gigabit or even 10 gigabits per second networks on the LAN side to maybe something less on the WAN side. So there's two ways you can do this. I would say for 80% plus of our customers, they will use VRRP on the LAN side because it's very, very simple. And that means on the LAN side of the SD-WAN appliance, you only have one of the two that is actively doing the transmitting at any point in time. The reason that works really well is because these x86-based standard hardware appliances that we and other SD-WAN vendors use are going to scale up to 10 gigabits per second fairly easily at a good price point. If you have customers that require load balancing, we can also do that. And so we are deployed at 8x10, for example. And so that's more of a scale out model at that point.
Okay. So you say in VRRP, so that kind of implies to me it's a somewhat of a small branch location where maybe, folks are actually using that as a gateway, as opposed to I'm going to light up a bunch of layer three links and load balance across those.
So the layer three link on the WAN side, we're always load balanced,
right? Course,
so we call that we call that bonding. On the LAN side, what we find, and I think probably this typical size of the branch is 20, 30, maybe 50 people, where you have this sort of demand for a much, much simpler edge, what we call the thin branch. And in that environment, setting the SD-WAN appliances as the next hub gateway is usually the easiest way to configure.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Oh, so let's move from, we've done a lot of architecture, design, kind of considering what things look like if we were to replace that WAN router when we might actually need to leave the WAN router in. Let's talk about operations, what it's like to cut over and go live if we're introducing an SD-WAN appliance into our environment. Is there a like a typical scenario you see where you're going through that replacement process at a site? Is it a phased approach where maybe you've got your existing WAN router there still, but your SD-WAN appliance runs in parallel, something like that? Or do you just kind of drop the SD-WAN device in all at once during a single maintenance window and go for it?
It's both. So we obviously everybody dreams of, or every vendor dreams of greenfield, but we all live in a brownfield reality, right? So we have a number of ways that we can insert non-disruptively. Now, if you're taking out the router, right, that is a maintenance window. There's no two ways about that. We could deploy out of band on the site from the router using things like PBR or WCCP. But if you're wanting to replace the router, that is a maintenance window. Now, the one part that we do is generally we will kind of do a show running config and then apply the policy, pre-build the policy in our, what we call our business intent overlay environments. So it's essentially the Silver Peak way of designing the virtual network on the WAN side. And so you can get that ready ahead of time so that when you then want to maybe transition 40 of your branches a week, which is a fairly common rate for our customers to migrate. You can stage those out, and as the new devices come on board, they automatically get synchronized with that policy that you set up in the orchestrator. So what you don't want, right, is you don't want to go and take out the old box, put in the new box, and then start to do a bunch of local configuration, right? That's exactly what we've gone away, thankfully, with the orchestration capability. And so you can essentially do a lot of the planning work that makes sense for the business in terms of which applications you want to handle through a certain path. You do that ahead of time, and then we suck that in. Because we support the routing protocols, when that new device is placed at the branch, a lot of the branch offices will have a floor layer 3 switch or an OSPF router on within the branch, right, on what we call the LAN side. Yeah. And so we will learn dynamically through the routing protocols what subnets exist in that branch. And through the SD-WAN fabric, we then disseminate that information throughout the entire fabric.
Oh, that's really cool. So you actually listen to the OSPF routes and then you know what's out there. You know what subnets must exist somewhere in the network. So you have them sitting there populating the table, ready to allocate.
That is key because, you know, some companies still have this spreadsheet, right? Where like I've got 100 sites across the world and I've managed to summarize my subnets in each one of these. But through acquisitions and, you know, generations of people that come and go, some of our customers would not know that at all, right? But the information sits in each one of these branches, right? There's a little bit of piece of truth in each one of these branches, and the routing protocol at the edge, great way to get that connective information. Not a great thing to do on the WAN side in terms of the per packet load balancing, as we talked about, right? The routing protocol there is maybe less interesting, but in terms of the discovery of what sits outside of the SD-WAN fabric, it's absolutely the reason that you want the routing protocol.
Yeah. But actually using it as a pre-configuration tool is a unique kind of thinking. I hadn't thought about it in the sense that there's a whole bunch of configuration data in there I could use to populate my SDN controller. Why not just listen to the routes and get that data?
Right. Huge, right? It's, yeah.
And zero-touch provisioning. How does zero-touch provisioning work for Silver Peak? So when I send a new box out to site, it's plug and play?
It's plug and play. And so we actually have customers that are hybrid, but they're hybrid to MPLS networks. And so the phone home capability should and does in our case run both over a private network, or if it's a branch that's strictly connected to the internet, We run what we call a cloud portal, which you can think of as essentially a rendezvous point. So the client's phone's home to the rendezvous point. The rendezvous point is synchronized with the customer's information in terms of where its orchestrator sits. Is the orchestrator on-prem at the customer site, or is it our cloud orchestrator, which we happen to run in Amazon? And we make the relay that way, and then the administrator goes through sort of a two-step authentication process.
You know what I love about that piece of stuff is I don't have to send an expert to site.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
Yeah, people miss that. Like rollouts of SD-WAN are actually much simpler. In the old days, we used to send out somebody to install the router and connect the cables and to wave mystical commands over the keyboard and, you know, do all the stuff that needed to be done. And it had to be somebody with a reasonably high level of competency. And there wasn't many of those, and they were expensive. And putting them on a plane, flying around the countryside, and then meeting them up with a delivery of a box was actually quite difficult. Whereas if you can actually just send the box out and, you know, by and large, just plug it in. Now, maybe the people on site aren't able or aren't ready to do that, but you don't need to send out an expert, just somebody who's a, you know, an electrician style, and say, plug this cable in here, plug this cable in here, and then it phones home. That's a massive transition in lowering the cost of deployment, that day one experience, I think.
Yeah, and on an ongoing basis too. If I'm adding a new app or I want to change a policy, I don't have to touch every box. It's not box by box. It's centralized and it just gets pushed out.
The zero touch stuff, it sure beats the days that I used to deal with of, okay, I'm mailing this box to the other side of the planet. I'm going to have to put in all these IPs and get them just right. Put it in the box. Okay, yeah. Guy on the other side of the planet, plug it in. Can I ping it? Yes, no, please.
I want to go home. I want to go to bed.
Yeah. Well, look, I guess, guys, what about the? You mentioned you dream of the greenfield, but of course, most of these deployments are brownfield. So I'm that person. I'm that engineer who's involved in rolling 40 sites a week or whatever it is. What kind of issues am I going to run into when I've got half my networks on the new fancy SD-WAN stuff? I've retired a bunch of routers, but I've still got legacy on the other side. Is there any things that you guys have observed that are typical challenges that you face during that transition?
Right. This was actually the initial reason we implemented the routing protocol. So if you think about a network where you still have some sites on MPLS, they're not connected to the internet, they still have the traditional router, and you have an island of your company, maybe it's one of the BUs where you've now transitioned to this beautiful SD-WAN world, they still need to talk to each other, right? And so if you support at the edge, right? So you can almost think of, as you make that transition, right? Think about it this way. If you think about the SD-WAN fabric as a large distributed chassis router, so where the branches essentially are the line cards and are what we call the fabric would be the backplane of that chassis, right? The part of the enterprise that you've transitioned to SD-WAN just happens to be one big virtual chassis distributed router, but it's still to the outside, to the legacy side of the enterprise, it's still just a standard layer 3 router that speaks the same RFC protocols. And so that's how you get this integration to work. And then over time, as you transfer or migrate more branches to the SD-WAN world, it's essentially as if you were plugging in additional line cards to that big modular enterprise scale router, right? And so that's really the way that you can go into a brownfield environment. To legacy equipment, we just look like a router.
Yeah, that's right. So you can still interoperate. So I can have SD-WAN and my legacy routed WAN. So I don't have to make an all or nothing bet.
Exactly. Yep, exactly. But over time, you'll get this.
At least with Silver Peak, I was going to say that, because not all of the SD-WAN solutions out in the marketplace can do that.
All right, that's why you're emphasizing the routing functionality. You support routing protocols because I can just put you into a branch. I could actually put you in as a router and then enable the SD-WAN stuff as and when.
Yeah, and again, from day one, we can interoperate with routers that are there, and Ralph talked about, you know, the multiple. Mm-hmm. Topological ways of doing that, or we can replace it, and we give customers that choice to make it easy.
Oh, that makes sense. I hadn't thought about it like that, because in a full mesh environment, you wouldn't want to create a second network where your SD-WAN is and then trombone back through the data center to loop onto the other side. Right. But having it interoperate, you can actually break out directly onto the legacy WAN, say your legacy RAN router is running OSPF, and talk directly to them just like you did, but SD-WAN, the stuff where you have SD-WAN edges. That's the joy of edge networking, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Yep.
I hadn't thought of that.
All right, so we've had a really good discussion here about actually replacing the WAN router. And this conversation kind of went like I thought it would. My expectation was, in a lot of cases, you actually can do this. You can replace the WAN router with the SD-WAN appliance. You've got all the pieces and parts that you need to get the same or similar functionality and get everything done that you need to in the one box. And so you can take the WAN router out of the picture in many, many cases. So I'm not... Like I said, it kind of went the way I thought it was going to, this conversation, not entirely surprised, and that's a good thing. So if people need to dig in more, Derek, do you have some resources that you could point them to? Where should they go to think more about this topic of WAN router replacement in the context of SD-WAN?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what the industry is believing, and I believe it, is that over the next few years, as WAN or as branch router refresh cycles come about, folks are really going to look seriously at replacing those routers with an SD-WAN infrastructure instead of a traditional router. And the estimates are anywhere from 50% to 80% of the refreshes will be based on SD-WAN. There's a link, I believe, that you'll be posting that. Is silver-peak.com/think-outside-the-router. And on that landing page are links to a number of different documents, including a higher level ebook on the top 10 reasons why you should retire your traditional router now, to a pretty detailed white paper on how to consolidate networking infrastructure from, you know, three or four different appliances to a single SD-WAN solution, those appliances being, you know, a router, a stateful firewall, WANOP appliance, and a new SD-WAN appliance. Why not put that all in one box? It reduces footprint, reduces power consumption, and probably more importantly, centralizes the management of all four of those functions from a single pane of glass. So from that landing page, there's a number of resources that your listeners can make avail to.
Very good. Thank you very much for that, Derek. And yes, that link is in the show notes if you want to dig into that, silver-peak.com/think-outside-router. And our special thanks to Silver Peak today for sponsoring today's discussion. They're on Twitter, of course, at Silver Peak, and you can find them on LinkedIn and Facebook as well. And we hope that the conversation today spun up your propeller beanie, gave you some good things to consider for your SD-WAN project. And if you do happen to ring up Silver Peak, let them know that you heard them on the Packet Pushers. You can find the show notes for this episode in your podcatcher right there on your phone. Take a look and click through if there's something you're interested in. If you visit packetpushers.net, there's over 1,000 other episodes from across our podcast network for networking and infrastructure pros, along with our community blog and news feeds. Tweet us at Packet Pushers, and we too are on LinkedIn. Rate us on Apple Podcasts. We'd appreciate that. And you can become a premium member at ignition.packetpushers.net. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.